Ich denke, viele von euch, die so mit Technik auch im Privaten zu tun haben, haben vielleicht solche Devices von Apple oder Google, so Bluetooth-Geschichten, die sehr praktisch sind, um Sachen irgendwo zu ordnen, wenn man vielleicht nach so einem Chaos-Event nicht weiß, wo der Rucksack gerade unterwegs ist. Darum an der Stelle erstmal einen dicken Applaus für Hendrik Pölz. Warum? Er präsentiert uns jetzt in seinem Vortrag Find My Device 101. Ja, Informationen darüber. What's going on in the air? Und darum, dicken Start. Hendrik, vielen Dank.
Yes, hi. Happy afternoon to everyone. I'm so glad that so many of you want to watch this talk and or wait for the next talk to reserve a seat. About the title of this talk, I am mainly going to talk about two different systems which have very similar names, which is why I decided to do a regex title. This did not go over well with pre-talk, so this is now my chosen title. What we are going to talk to about today are the what, the how, and now. Basically, I'm going to introduce the technologies behind these systems, which will basically be shown to you as a series of problems and solutions. And later on, we are combining all of these solutions into a coherent system, because it turns out, basically, you end up with the same thing if you do it multiple times. They all look the same. Then I'll show you... Sorry. Apologize. Then I'll show you how... what it looks like behind the scenes, and a very short introduction into the tools you are going to need if you do want to do research on this on your own, which is what my original intent with this talk was, is to get all of you, well, most of you, interested in the topic, and please do something useful with this. Now, what are we going to talk about? The left side shows, I try to do this basically non-judgmental. I'm not advertising for any particular system. I do not want to do any trademark infringement, so I try to cram as many of these as possible onto the screen. I think that's most of the major brands. They all function very much almost the same, and I hope nobody wants to sue me. What these do is, like Pupa already introduced, is allow you to find things. Basically, they allow you to find the device, and hopefully whatever is attached to it is still attached to it. The inner workings of this is that these are battery-powered beacons. They emit a local radio signal, which is nice, but a local radio signal usually doesn't help you that much in finding things, which is why there's a second component which does the wow thing. There's a network behind that allows you to find these globally. So you have local radio beacons that emit a signal that allow you to find the things in a global scale, on a global scale, which is an interesting technological achievement. But how do we do that? Well, in order to get there, we have to look at how the history was, on how this was constructed and how this developed over the past 15 years. And basically, if you start with the intent of tracking something and being informed about the current position of it, there's pretty much nothing easier than to just build a tracker. You build a battery-powered device that knows its own location, by GPS, for example, and then transmits that location to the interested parties, i.e. me, by GSM, for example. These have existed for a long time in various forms. James Bond has a couple of them, and AliExpress also. And this is basically the trivial approach, is you have a device that transmits it, actively transmits its location to somewhere, and you retrieve it from there. This is what Apple then did in a great announcement in 2009 with Find My iPhone. Find My iPhone is basically just the phone software implementation of the same principle. The phone knows where it is. It transmits this information to its central server, and then later on you log into your iCloud account and retrieve this information from the central server. They extended that with another press announcement 2 years later as Find My Friends, but the principle is the same. So it's just, you know, a couple of additional ACLs on the location reports in order for you to find people who have given you the permission to find them. What was interesting, what changed, a new branch on the technological development, is that around the same time Bluetooth Low Energy was introduced. Bluetooth Low Energy is a protocol in the Bluetooth family of protocols. The old protocol called Bluetooth was then just renamed as Bluetooth Classic to distinguish it. And these two coexist now. They are technologically a little quite dissimilar. They are, you know, they use the same frequencies and they are described by the same standards body. But other than that, they are quite distinct. And Bluetooth Low Energy, you might not believe it, uses very low amount of energy. I think the name gave it away. I'm going to show the trick, how they did that on the next slide. But this is basically the game-changing idea here now, is that in Bluetooth Low Energy, devices send more than they receive. Turns out, so there's one thing I want you to remember from this evening, this afternoon, it's dark, from this afternoon, that is very counterintuitive, is receiving takes more energy than sending. So the big trick for Bluetooth Low Energy is the devices send all the time. And that was interesting, because now you have something that sends all the time, now we can just, you know, put data into the things they're sending, and that is what Apple did with iBeacon. iBeacon introduced 2013. Basically uses Bluetooth Low Energy as it was designed. There's an advertisement that's being sent every couple of seconds, and Apple just put in some data into there, and that was iBeacon. iBeacon is the inverse of what we're trying to achieve. iBeacon is a fixed thing at a fixed position, and your phone now can find it, or can know that it's there. Google always does the same thing 2 years later, so Google introduced Eddystone. Talking about Google, you will not be surprised to hear that Eddystone was discontinued 3 years later in 2018. But it's basically the same principle. You have beacons that transmit a fixed set of information, maybe even a changing set of information. Apple only has UUIDs in there. Google did even full URLs in there, and then not. But that was the basic idea. And now we have all the ingredients necessary to build a tracking system, and that is what Tile did in 2013. Tile, I think it was a Kickstarter project at the time, was the original Bluetooth tracker, a small device, I don't have one to show you, but basically, you know, a small device, which was new, that you can put on your keychain. It's battery operated, non-rechargeable, non-replaceable, and it will just emit a beacon every now and then, and your phone, which by comparison has an infinite amount of power, your phone will receive the beacon, and if you are outside of range, your phone will can tell you where it last saw your keychain. This is useful for certain use cases, certainly useful for things that don't move on their own, and that you always carry with you, so it's basically about forgetting things. It's not about locating things. They added this in 2015 with Community Find, which is very close to the target solution we're going to describe. Community Find allows you to deputize other phones. You have your Tile that is connected to your account, and then you tell the Tile network this is lost. Please find it, and all the other phones of the Tile network will then cooperate and send a report to Central Tile Server if they find it. Now, this was in 2015. Something happened in the mid of the 2010s. People started being more privacy conscious. There was a bit of Snowden in 2013. There was a very large leak of a running platform called Strava in 2017, which had a rather huge impact. And basically, as a security conscious person, as a security researcher, I would expect anything designed after 2017-ish to be very secure or to be built with security in mind, and that is what Apple did with Apple Find My in 2019. This is basically combining Find My iPhone, Find My Mac, Find My Friends, and, you know, just drop the last word. This is how Apple calls their system now. It's the Find My network. This I'm going to describe next, and you know, Google does the same thing 2024. It's called Find My Device, which was a name that was not yet taken yet. So one trick I wanted, I promise I want to show you, is how the low energy consumption is achieved. Is in the difference between discovering devices. In classic Bluetooth, if you had a device, you know that if you go on your phone onto the Bluetooth screen or on your laptop, it shows this device is now discoverable. Discoverable is a state in the Bluetooth stack. And what it does in discoverable state is it goes into listening mode, inquiry scan mode, every now and then for a comparatively long time. And for this, it needs to switch on the entire radio chain. Then, if a different device wants to find Bluetooth devices, it sends inquiries. So the red ones are sending. It sends inquiries until it's lucky to find a device that is currently in inquiry scan and answers. Now, if we say that the discoverable device is the one that has low battery power, and the other thing is a mobile phone, that is basically the wrong way around. Because this device spends a long time with its radio switched on, just hoping someone would connect. What Bluetooth Low Energy does is basically turn this around. A device is called advertising, and that's its default state. And what it does is it sends advertisement frames all the time, once per second, maybe more often. But this is not to scale, it's just a little bit to scale. But because it only is in the sending mode for a very short amount of time, this uses dramatically less power. On the other hand, if a mobile phone wants to find this device, they switch on their radio chain for a long time, relatively long time, and can then see all the beacons that are in the air. That is the basic trick of Bluetooth Low Energy, and that is all that we need to construct a global tracking network. Like the initial Tile community find system. So the terms we're going to use is we have our accessory. This is the neutral term for tag here. Then there's a non-owner phone. And there's an owner phone. The owner phone or the non-owner phone sees the beacons. There's some kind of ID in there. Let's you know not go into that. There's some kind of ID in there, like an iBeacon ID, UUID. The non-owner phone sees the ID, reports its current location based on the GPS location to a centralized server, and the owner phone can then retrieve this report from the centralized server. Couple of problems. Privacy-wise, having a globally unique MAC address is a privacy problem because it's, well, globally unique. It can be recognized across sightings, it can be correlated across receivers, and that, if you're building an attacker model for this, is basically exactly what the attacker needs. Bluetooth Low Energy has a partial solution for this. It's called a random MAC address. These can be randomized and resolvable, where they use a secret key in the background, the identity resolving key, together with a changing random number, so that the device can rotate its MAC address every now and then. But devices that know the identity resolving key can still recognize that it's the same device. Problem is, this does not work globally. It only works if you give out the identity resolving key. And we're still in the mode where we send the reports about the current location to the centralized server, which kind of is exactly fitting our attacker model. So if I'm sending all my location reports to Apple, then Apple can be the attacker. What we want to have is a system that prevents Apple from knowing what we're doing. So that's the second of three core ideas this evening. Sorry, this afternoon. Is to encrypt the location reports. Like I said, the advertisement can contain data. We just put an ID in there, but there's no reason this has to be an ID. We can just put a public key in there. So in the first step, the owner device and the accessory exchange, through some mechanism, a public-private key pair. Then the accessory just broadcasts this public key in the advertisement frames. Any non-owner device that receives this broadcast can and take its current location, encrypt it with the public key, send it to the centralized server. The centralized server can see who this report comes from, but cannot look into the report. So if all the parties behave correctly, Apple cannot track all the accessories. Well, they could obviously, you know, look up the IP address of the incoming report and stuff like that, but they can always do that. And we have solved this now because the owner phone can download the encrypted reports, has the private key, can decrypt them, and can know where the accessory was last sighted. We have still one problem. This is broadcasting a public key, which, you know, is not an ID but behaves the same way. It's, you know, it's a static public key is the same thing as a static public ID. So we need to change it. And that's the second core idea, third core idea for these systems, is that you change the broadcast public ID, public key every now and then. The way this happens differs a little bit, but the idea is the same, is that there's some sort of static secret and a rotation mechanism where you can evolve the secret into different variants over time. And at each step, you derive the new private and public key and broadcast the public key. The owner device knows the same secret or equivalent things, can derive the same sequence of keys, and can then decrypt the reports that come in, while the non-owner devices are completely oblivious that this is going on. Okay, so the alternate title of this slide would have been "We have both kinds of music," because now we're talking about Apple on iOS and Google on Android. Like I had told you earlier, Apple calls this the Find My Network, FMN, and Google calls this the Find My Device Network, FMDN. Totally different things. Also on the market, there is Tile, which was the original tracker. They do not have any of the they do not have most of the privacy protections, but they have the largest installed user base because they were first. And for some reason, there's also Samsung, which does not implement one of these three protocols. They have their own. I don't really know why, because there's no unique selling point to it. The only reason or the only benefit of this is that it's going to Samsung servers instead of Google servers, with the big drawback that it only works with Samsung phones instead of all phones. Since this is a numbers game and we are counting on the network effect, that does not look like a benefit to me. But Samsung so far refuses to implement any of the, you know, protocols everyone else has. Apple Find My, like I said, was the first of these privacy Bluetooth tracking protocols. It uses elliptic curve encryption with the NIST curve. Apple published some of this information, not everything, especially not the communication with the server, which is why already 4 years ago, people reverse engineered that. Alexander Heinrich and Milan Stute, Tim Kornhuber and Matthias Hollig. They also have an independent implementation of the Apple protocol. They can build their own Find My Network devices. Not Find My Device Network devices. They can build their own Find My Network devices. And they have their own receiving software called Open Haystack. Apple's choice of elliptic curve is a bit curious because I said earlier that there are, I did not say that, but it was on the slides, that there are 31 bytes of data in the advertisement frame. Some of this is already used. So the 28-byte public key of Apple's curve does not actually fit into the advertisement frame. Apple had a cool hack for that. They just used random address mode and put the remaining 6 bytes of public key into the MAC address. You know, they are random, and you know, you have to cover 2 additional bits because a random MAC address always has 2 bits set, but other than that, it's a nice idea, and also fulfills all the requirements. I'm not going to go deeper into the Apple network because, you know, you can read all of that, and I'm guessing there are talks. Google, Find My Device, has a different approach. The end effect is the same, though. So in Google, in the Google world, because they were later, they already had the benefit of being able to base this on something existing, which is the Google FastPair service. Google FastPair is something that might be known to most of you who were here last year. Because that is the mechanism that is used to pop up the headphone once to pair with your phone dialogue on your modern Android phones, which is something that a Flipper Zero can emit in fast succession in large halls. A couple of people did this last year. I think it was funny the first time, maybe the second time, but afterwards it got stale fast. But this is an existing specification which talks about how to talk to devices, and Google just extended that and put Find My Device in there, which means it's just natural that you have headphones, wireless headphones that implement FastPair and then are just extended with Find My Device capabilities. Behind the scenes, on initial pairing, there's a so-called ephemeral identity key being generated. Note the language is a bit confusing here because this key is not ephemeral. It's not an ephemeral key, but it's a key for an ephemeral identity. So it's an ephemeral identity key and not an ephemeral identity key. It's chosen by the owner phone, transmitted to the accessory. That's the part that comes on the next slide. What's interesting here is that they are generating three derived keys, because what they specify is that for FastPair accessories, all commands you send to the device must be authenticated. And the way to do that is, you know, you have to have a key. The owner phone, that's not a problem, but especially for trackers, you want to be able to communicate to the tracker even without being the owner. So if you find a tracker you want, or if you suspect there's a tracker, you want to make it beep. That's what the Ring key is for. These derived keys are stored on Google servers, and presumably you can just ask Google, hey, I found a device that is broadcasting this ID, please give me the Ring key, I want to make it ring. And then you can send authenticated commands to it to make it ring. They have published this specification, you can read it online. It will always try to translate it to whatever language it thinks it should be translated to. You have to manually set it back to English because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. Or at least it makes less sense. But yeah, that's where you can look up how to build one if you wanted to. I think you still have to pay license fees because it has to be registered with Google servers. What Google does in their advertisement frames is they have a shorter elliptic curve, only 20 bytes. And they're using the Eddystone format. Like I said, Eddystone was dead. It's not entirely dead. They just added two additional types, broadcast types, and since they're only using 20-byte keys, they have a bit of room. So if you're looking at it with old software, it will just say there are Eddystone beacons here of type hex 40 or 41. Internally, they are using deterministic elliptic curve key generation, which means they use this as ephemeral identity key with AES encounter mode to encrypt the current time, more or less, generate a private key on this elliptic curve from that, generate the public key from that, which is then the 20-byte identifier that is being published, that is being broadcast. The owner phone can do the same calculation and retrieve all the decrypted reports. Okay, let's talk about abuse. In my own humble opinion, these Bluetooth trackers are not very good things for abuse, not a rational choice to stalk someone because, you know, they are not that accurate, they run out of battery, there's all these countermeasures. But people who do that are not rational people. So the low cost and high accessibility makes it so that there's an increased potential for abusing Bluetooth trackers of this kind. You know, you can buy them in a 4-pack for $100. You don't have to know that AliExpress exists. So what Google and Apple did as a reaction to this is that they are the good guys. They have firmware protections built in, which basically means that the tag monitors its connection to the owner phone. And if it loses the connection to the owner phone for too long a time, it goes into away mode, or not near owner mode. and initiates countermeasures. Countermeasures are different, but there's a baseline. Basically, they beep every now and then or when they're being moved. They reduce the frequency of their identity rotation so that it's easier to correlate different sightings. And what I'm going to talk about in the next slide, they make it easier to pinpoint them. More about the topic of digital stalking, there was a talk on day two that you can look up. So this is now the third and last acronym in today's acronym soup. For the Find My Network, the Find My Device Network, both of these, well, Apple, Google, yes, Apple is on the way, I think, they all implement DULT, which is a very dull acronym. It's an IATF working group that works, that is tasked or tasked itself with the topic of detecting unwanted location trackers. And tracker-like devices. So in their standards, it's very agnostic. They're not talking just about tiny tags, but anything that can be hidden and has the capability to report its location. So what they do talk about is not a... basically, they speak in the language of the location available. Basically, what they're interested in is, has the owner of this device knowledge of its location? Independent of how that happens. So it would also apply to a GSM tracker. And then it's required to send a certain bit. So it's basically like the evil bit in IP, but this time, because these can mostly only be produced by proper companies who promise to do the firmware correctly, the device will set a certain bit in its broadcast frames to notify all receiving devices that the owner of this device knows its location and can react accordingly. What they also introduced here is the interesting thing of commands for non-owner devices. So most of the specification talks about what the owner device does, but they specifically give authorization for non-owner devices to interact with the device if it's in not in near owner state. So if I lose the tag, this is a, on the Google Find My Device network, if I lose this for too long time, and this I've switched off the phone that is connected to this, so it is lost now, more or less, it emits a different kind of beacon that you can see on the receiver, and I can connect to it, and without any further authorization, I can make it beep. Normally, I would need authorization to make it beep if it's not, if it's in near owner state. Okay, that was the introduction and backgrounds on all of these protocols and all of these acronyms. So I hope you now can reliably distinguish Find My Network devices from Find My Device Network devices, which makes it a little bit easier. I'm not talking about Find My Network that much anymore. And I'm going to show you how you can receive this. Because, you know, it's in the air. You can just stick out your antenna. And first and most obvious thing is you need, you're taking a software-defined radio, which interestingly is called radio. So CHEM 2015 brought these and gave a lot of these to hackers all around Germany at least. This is HackRF, it's called, compatible, and can receive 2.4 gigahertz signals. I have on, sorry, I have on the screen a screenshot from this laptop a couple of hours ago showing, and I filtered it for the UUID of Google Find My Device frames, and showing that, yes, you can receive these frames, but if you look at the timing between them, which is not that easier, you will notice that it does not pick up all the frames. It's relatively weak in reception. It's not the best tool to, you know, work on 2.4 gigahertz. Let's just use a tool that is designed for the job. And there's a company, again, I'm not trying to make any advertisements, but there's a company that makes a lot of these, Nordic. They have the almost ubiquitous NRF line of products. I think I have three different development kits here. They sell for like $20 on any parts component store. And Nordic was kind enough to make available a firmware that turns this into a fully fledged Bluetooth sniffer. You just plug in the development board, upload the Nordic Bluetooth sniffer firmware, get this into Wireshark, and that is what you get on the screen. It's, you know, a fully functioning Wireshark plugin. You can select the MAC address, the apparent MAC address of the device you're interested in. It will then even automatically follow this and do all the decoding and stuff. On the screen, you can now see the packet format of a Google Find My Device, network device. This is the service user ID FEAA. And in there, so FEAA is the Eddystone ID. And in there, you'll find a report that is not an original Eddystone format, it's 4.1. 4.1 is for a device that is not near its owner. So 4.0 is a device that is near owner, and a 4.1 is a device that is not near owner. Now, what can I do with that? Again, let's use a job that is fit for the tool that's fit for the job. NRF Connect is a different tool, also from Nordic, incidentally. On Android, it allows you to listen for advertisement frames, has filters, and, you know, again, I filtered for this here. Don't be alarmed. Bluetooth people are the wrong way around. So sometimes it's little endian. I filtered for this kind of frame. Then it allows me to do a Bluetooth LE connection in here. Like I said before, this device is actually not in near owner mode, so I can send it commands. If you look carefully at the screenshot, you can see, so I can send a command here. There is, on the dual specification, there's a list of commands I can send. Three slides back, that was the URL. I can send a command like 0300, which will make the beeper go active. And what you see here is that I send 03001 to shut it off again. Okay. Those are the tools you can use to interact with this. There's one additional thing, is reverse engineering the actual Android app by Google that makes this. This is what I originally started out doing, is try to inject myself into the SSL traffic. Turns out there's a lot of certificate pinning going on, and it's all very tedious. There are tools for that, too. Ah, someone found it. Thanks. I use the Moto here because, compared to the other device, it has a relatively less intensive beeper. Thanks for the demonstration. So for this screenshot, I circumvented the public key pinning, and apparently internally the API is called Nova, and there is this list of this list devices endpoint, and yes, I can find my Moto tag in there, but it's all very tedious and encrypted. And originally, I wanted to end my talk with this slide and call on you to reverse engineer this, because I, as a user story, I want to be able to find my tags or to know the ephemeral identity key of my tags, so that my home assistant can inform me if my bike keys are not home. Turns out, too late. Leon Böttger, who is also one of the developers of these AirGuard applications, did this 2 weeks ago. Yeah, so what is left for you to do is, you know, look at it, improve it, maybe integrate it into Home Assistant or anything else, and look at the other stuff. I hinted at looking at the Air interface. On a protocol level, everything should be encrypted properly, and the algorithms and derivation and everything that like that looks fine, but maybe there's some weirdness on the Air interface. You never know. I mean, there was a talk on day one about one of these things on my first slide, so maybe you'll find some additional stuff. That And with that, I'm not sure if we can have questions.
I think it's 5 minutes we have for questions. Big applause for Hendrik. Come to the microphones, or we are the signal angels. Are there any questions from the internet? No, from the internet. So here, microphone number two.
Okay, so really quick question. If, for example, no owner device have mock localization turned on, if the beacon connect to no owner phone, will the phone send the localization, like encrypted localization, further, but not real one, but the mocked one?
You mean if the non-owner device that is detecting a tracker does not have a current location, or has stale location data?
Yeah, have like
probably. Probably not. I think that's an implementation thing. I guess most phones know where they are at most times.
Yeah, but you can trick them to show other localization.
Yeah, of course. Then it will send nonsense reports.
Okay, thanks.
Microphone number one, please.
Hello. Yeah, I wanted to ask, you use those tracker often for securing your bicycle or stuff like that. So I deploy my bicycle at the train station, go to work. Will it go to the owner phone away mode?
Yeah, that is an implementation question. I'm not entirely sure what the different timeouts is. Apple is very mum on the topic. I think it's an hour for Apple and 50 minutes for Android. Might be a day, though. I'm not entirely sure.
So every thief will instantly find the track out?
Yes, maybe, yes. So there are people who build devices that cannot be found because, you know, everything in here assumes that you're operating in good faith. You could just not set the bit and rotate the key much faster. And there are rumors that, you know, certain marketplaces offer these things. But I wouldn't know anything about that in practice.
Microphone number five, please.
Yes, hello, thank you for the talk. For your last question, I'm aware of research papers that de-anonymize Bluetooth through small imperfections in the antenna, but they need many traces, so maybe not a real-world attacker.
Yeah.
Thanks. Then microphone number one.
Yes, thank you for the nice talk. I've been working with Apple Find My for 1.5 years now, and I noticed some weird behavior on Apple's side that, like, different devices, iPhone, Mac, iPad, show different location updates for devices. And sometimes my phone doesn't show an update for, like, 2 days, but on the Mac it's totally up to date, like 5 minutes ago. Do you know where it comes from? And the second question is there any good way to access the Apple API to fetch like custom trackers? Because I tried Open Haystacks and the plugin seems to be outdated to access the Apple API. Is there any new tool?
So for the second question, I do not know, because the only thing I know is Open Haystack. I talked to the author some time ago. And yeah, since manufacturers tend to treat this as a privacy problem and a PR problem if it becomes, you know, a privacy problem, they tend to lock down these APIs. And sorry, I don't know anything better, especially, you know, Apple Secure Boot and all that stuff. It's comparatively secure. For the first question, I guess it goes in the same direction, because the non-owner device, the owner devices that want to find the decrypt the reports need the current key. Since Apple does not know the key, it must be encrypted with something somewhere in some keychain, and maybe they don't have the synchronization figured out quite yet.
Okay, thank you very much.
I know that for Google, for example, Google will not show the locations in the Find My in the web browser. Because the web browser does not have the keys. They are only stored on phones in secure storage.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Then a big applause for Hendrik Plötz.